Tim, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining me. Now, credit card data was reportedly open from June 2016 up until last month, October. How does a vulnerability like this remain hidden for so long?
Look, I think it's about how that is not very well.
Oh, sorry.
As you said in your intro, there's been several data breaches over the last couple of months. And what it's shown is that we don't have a lot of faith in the security protocols that they're putting in place to ensure that if we're giving over data to government services, it's being adequately protected, either from accidental or intentional leakages. I think that's something that people should be very concerned about.
To backtrack a little bit, now, some murky waters around what has actually happened with this issue and anything to do with, you know, data leaks, people go into a bit of a frenzied overdrive. Can you explain to us what's actually happened with this particular issue?
I probably can't go into the specifics of how this one went about, but I you're right in terms of people need to know what's been happening, and they need to know when it happened. So the government has actually moved in the direction that they need to in this, and I'll give them credit for that. And that's in the idea of mandatory data breach notification, which basically means if they accidentally screw up and they leak out our data or it gets out somewhere, they're mandatorily required to report it so that we know it's happened. And that was one of the big problems until they fixed that little problem, because we never knew if this stuff was getting out. We weren't informed, or we were informed through investigative journalism that actually, you know, discovered it after the fact. Now, there's a level of trust that has to be placed into government agencies. And if they're not even going to tell us when these things have happened, then how are we going to trust that it's going to be fixed and made better in the future? So that little problem there has been fixed. You know, the data breach notifications will come into effect fairly soon. And then people will be able to have a bit more trust in how that data is being protected. But the issue around how these things happen and whether we can actually trust massive, and we're talking massive data trove, you know, in Medicare details of all Australians, there's a huge amount of data. And it's big for anyone to manage. And as you know, government agencies aren't the best at being streamlined or efficient or you know, doing the right thing at the best time. It's a massive bureaucracy after all. So we need to have trust that they're actually going to be able to protect that data because it's our personal data.
Mm. Well, the Department of Social Services, of course, like most agencies, is forced to use contractors to store their massive volumes of data because they don't have the facilities to store it all themselves. It seems like a rock and a hard place. Does using a third party to handle this information create a much higher risk of unauthorized access to data?
Not necessarily. I think one of the problems that needs to be resolved is whether or not that third party then gets access to that data for other means. So you would have seen the changes that went through POAG to allow for our driver's license images to be added to the National Biometrics and Facial Recognition Database, which up till now has only been used for border security and border screening at airports and those sort of things, and for extreme terrorism and police use. Now, that expansion is a big overreach into, you know, my image and your image and our personal information when we're not the targets of those investigations. One of the things that was revealed in that process was that the government was considering giving access to third parties, for-profit enterprises, for a fee to access that service. Now, the way they put it forward was, well, if we're outsourcing these, we want them to do the best job they can. So we should give them reverse access back into our facial recognition database. But to do it at a fee base means that there's no company that's going to do that without getting something in return. And that opens up to what we will have eventually is a government with a database of its citizenry selling that data to a for-profit company. And that's a very wrong way to look at it. You know, this is our government. They're supposed to be doing a service to us, not selling us to another service. I think that's where the rhetoric and the way that we're approaching this is getting into very dangerous territory.
Mm. Yeah, that's a genuinely terrifying prospect.
It's a very Orwellian one as well. I think that's one of the things that we try and sort of point back to is that it's not a conspiracy. It's not something that we're thinking about in terms of the possibilities. It's happening now. And the more that we just sleepwalk into it, the more we'll see this eventuality happen, which is why we're pushing back against any and all elements of it right now, so that it doesn't get to that stage.
Yeah, fending off a genuine dystopic reality. If you've just tuned into The Daily this morning, we're talking with Tim Singleton-Norton, Chair of Digital Rights Watch, about the recent Department of Social Services credit card system leak. Now, Tim, we've seen a couple of data breaches recently, like the aforementioned Medicare data leak, and we covered that with Digital Rights Watch back in July. With further digitization of government records, are we more likely to see more frequent data breaches?
I think it's very likely. And it doesn't necessarily have to happen through a technological means. There's a great example in the UK from, I think it was a couple of years back, where a huge trove of NHS data, so their equivalent of Medicare, was found on a USB stick in a bin in a park. It was accidentally placed there, clearly. Some government employee was transferring data, had his lunch, you know, threw his lunch in the bin, accidentally left it there. Now, the chances of that happening and the chances of someone picking it up, and the person who picked it up just rang the cops and said, I found this. I think the government should have it back. That's lucky. But these kind of human errors could happen in any and all circumstances. There's security protocols that you can put in place. There's systems, there's, you know, two-step authentications and protective systems and take the servers themselves off online access. All of those measures are good, but what we actually need is a culture that actually puts the protection of citizens' data first. That is where we're not at. We've got ministers and governments who are looking at the opportunistic elements of having these huge data troves. But they're not coming at it from the start with an idea of how can we ensure that citizens' data is protected, because they genuinely don't think it's necessary. And I think that's the thing that we actually need to change, is the culture of how we approach this situation. Then we can get to the technical solutions, but we're never going to be able to design technical solutions unless we come at that from a good place to start with.
At least I suppose it's good to hear there are steps in the right direction that can be taken. It's not all a lost cause. It's just going to be a matter of seeing whether those steps actually are followed through. Tim, thanks so much for joining me this morning to unpack a little bit about what happened with this particular issue and the greater spectrum of data retention. I appreciate your time.